Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website mentalfloss.com. A couple of questions befitting this month of January. Question number one, starting with a true-false question. The Earth is farthest from the sun in this, the wintry month of January. Is that true or is that B, false? Question number two. The city with the most snowfall per year is located in which country? Is that A, the USA, B, Japan, C, Russia, D, Iceland, or E, Argentina? Hint, this city receives an average of 26 feet of snow per year. The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of January 24th. Well, it was on this day, back in 1858, that Mendelssohn's Wedding March was presented for the very first time as the daughter of Queen Victoria married the Crown Prince of Prussia. 1858 today, the Wedding March. And it was 80 years ago today, 1940, in Rockford, Illinois, that Frank Sinatra made his first public appearance with the Tommy Dorsey Band at the Coronado Theater. 1940 today, Sinatra and Dorsey. And in country music news, we have this article titled, The Story of Elvis Presley's Hound Dog. This is published in mentalfloss.com by Miss Selenia, and that was published on the 21st of October, 2012. The classic song Hound Dog was released in 1952 and was number one on the charts for 7 weeks. Yeah, that was 1952. Okay, before you jump the gun, let me tell you, this original version of Hound Dog had nothing to do with Elvis Presley. The first version of Hound Dog was recorded by a 25-year-old African-American rhythm and blues singer named Willie Mae Big Mama Thornton. The song was a smash hit and sold almost 2 million copies. Sadly, Big Mama Thornton hardly collected any of the profits she rightly deserved. All right, now let's skip up to the spring of 1956. A young rock and roll singer named Elvis Presley was the hottest act in show business. The hip-shaking Elvis already had number one records and albums and was selling out live concerts all over America. But the red-hot Elvis was currently experiencing his first bit of comeuppance. In April of 56, Elvis committed to a 2-week booking in Las Vegas at the Venus Room of the New Frontier Hotel. Elvis was declared a flop by Las Vegas audiences and critics alike, playing nightly to a half-bored adults who failed to fall under his spell as their teenage kids had. Being a flop in Las Vegas or anywhere is no fun. And after giving a less-than-spectacular show to a less-than-enthused crowd one night, Elvis drifted over to another hotel to take in a show. The group on stage was Freddie Bell and the Bellboys. They gave their own version of Willa Mae's Hound Dog, a more souped-up, rockier version. Elvis broke up when he first heard the funny song with its strange lyrics. Soon, Elvis was coming to see Freddie and his Blue Boys every night, and yes, every time they sang Hound Dog, Elvis would crack up hysterically. Now we cut to July 1, 1956. TV host Steve Allen featured the 21-year-old Elvis as the guest star on his television program, The Steve Allen Show. Steve was trying to, quote-unquote, tame the reckless rock and roll whirling dervish, and he had poor Elvis appear on his show in a formal tuxedo and tails. And so, in what Elvis would later call the most embarrassing moment of his career, he appeared singing Hound Dog to a Basset hound while wearing his white tie and tails. No hip waggling and no gyrations. Elvis was directed to just stand there and sing the song to the bored-looking mutt named Sherlock. Elvis dutifully did what he was told, and the whole Hound Dog thing might have just ended like the memory of a bad toothache for a disillusioned Elvis. But every once in a while, although not too often and not often enough, a terrible experience develops into something wonderful. The very next day, July 2, 1956, after the Steve Allen Show, Elvis reported to RCA Studios to cut a few sides. Yep, you guessed it. Hound Dog was on the agenda. It took the super sensitive Elvis 31 takes to get just the right version of Hound Dog on acetate. But after 31 takes, he knew he had one that felt right. Interestingly, Elvis not only rock and rolled Hound Dog up, but he changed the original lyrics. Elvis added in the strange line, "You ain't never caught a rabbit and you ain't no friend of mine," to the Lieber Stroller lyrics. This odd lyric, like a shake of salt in a perfect stew, morphed a raw diamond into a perfectly polished gem.
It's too darn hot. It's too darn hot. I'd like to sup with my baby tonight. Refill the cup with my baby tonight. I'd like to sup with my baby tonight. Refill the cup with my baby tonight. But I ain't up to my baby tonight, 'cause it's too darn hot.
This 1956 recording of Ella Fitzgerald singing this weather-related song by Cole Porter introduces our jazz and Broadway music news. It's an article titled "The Pleasure and Pain of Being Cole Porter." Almost inhumanly prolific, the songwriter produced a new kind of American lyric and language. This is published in NewYorker.com on the 13th of January, 2020, by Adam Gopnik. Back in 1976, the incomparable drama critic Kenneth Tynan wondered in his diary when someone was going to take a deep breath and declare that at some time in the 30s, the serious music tradition finally withered, curled up, and died of sterility and malnutrition, and that the greatest composers of the 20th century are Berlin, Rogers, Porter, Kern, Gershwin, et al. This view, bold enough at the time to be fit only for a diary, has by now become commonplace. In the mid-1970s, you had to haunt London record stores to find Ella Fitzgerald's, Gershwin's, or Cole Porter albums. Now those recordings and the songs they illuminate are everywhere, prompted perhaps by the publication in the early 70s of Alec Wilder's groundbreaking study, American Popular Song, The Great Innovations and Innovators, 1900 to 1950. The old songwriters have come to have a new presence, and their songs even a collective brand name, the American Songbook. Their music is now taken up routinely by the same rock singers who once seemed to have overshadowed them, with some, Van Morrison singing A Foggy Day, oddly good, some, Rod Stewart singing Someone to Watch Over Me, oddly bad, and some, Bob Dylan singing The Night We Called It a Day, just odd. Like all victories in art, this one has a double-edged result. On the one hand, the music is, mostly, out there. On the other, the essential work of discrimination is lost in a blanketing cloud of nostalgia. Embattled memory takes things apart. Complacent nostalgia squashes them back together. These days, a smiling, everyone-together spirit inflects the appreciative albums and Lincoln Center celebrations. Though he was born into genuine, if provincial, affluence, with second-tier European royalty filling out the family's dance card on vacation, Porter chose to become a working stiff. Reversing the usual American ascent from labor to leisure makes for a more strenuous and more moving story. The labor produced a new kind of American lyric and language. Porter's personal tale was well known, even when other songwriters were not. To get a biopic, peers among the great songwriters had to die young, like Lorenz Hart or Gershwin, who got a pretty good movie in Rhapsody in Blue. But Porter was the subject of two movies, including one, Night and Day, 1946, made in his lifetime and with his reluctant collaboration. Porter's story was appealing because it was seemingly so generational, so Fitzgerald-like in its ascension from Midwestern beginnings to East Coast fame. Born in Peru, Indiana, in 1891 to the wealthiest family in town, perhaps the wealthiest in all of Indiana, he went to Yale right before the Great War. Fitzgerald, 4 years behind him at Princeton, regarded Porter's commercial career a little enviously as a path not taken. A precocious, though largely untrained musician, Porter wrote what are still among the school's fight songs. Then came a short period of service in the war, followed by a long holiday in Europe through the early 1920s. It was a perfect jazz age life, disrupted only by Porter's determination to get to New York and become a successful Broadway songwriter. It might be argued, and has been, most noticeably in William McBrien's 1998 biography, that Porter's sexuality shaped his sentiments, which burst out in happy one-night stand songs like Just One of Those Things and I've Got You Under My Skin, with their note of sexual infatuation cherished but not easily transmuted into domesticity. But beneath his smooth, genial, almost inhumanly productive and evasive surface, there were turbulent waters. His very name, for all its air of Ivy League ease, represents a burdened legacy. The Porters were his difficult, scapegrace father's family. The Coles were his mother's rich and ambitious Indiana family. He was a Porter by birth, but if his mother had anything to do with it, would be a Cole for life. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, Use Music to Beat the Winter Blues. This is published in UnderwaterAudio.com, December 2019. The Winter Blues. For me, they always seem to hit hardest after the holidays. The decorations are down, the extra lights are off, and the vacation is over, but we're still in the thick of winter. The days are still short, the weather, here anyway, is still keeping us indoors more often than not, and spring break seems so very far away. When you're struggling with your mood in the throes of the winter blues, down in the dumps, have a case of doldrums, etc., what do you feel like doing? Usually it's something like eating junk food, avoiding people and responsibilities, staying inside, sleeping all day, staying up watching movies. Any of that sound familiar? Unfortunately, the things that can sound the most appealing when we're down just make it worse. They become part of a self-perpetuating cycle. You feel lousy and gain weight, which makes it even harder to exercise, which makes you feel more tired but less able to sleep, which makes you cranky, which makes you avoid people, which makes you lonely, which makes you sad, and so on and on and on. So, when you feel lousy, what can you do? There's a general consensus on what helps with seasonal moods: light, especially sunlight, exercise, vitamin D, social interaction, and improved sleep help make a big difference in how you feel. But how do you dig yourself out of that pit when a part of you just wants to curl up and stay there? How music can help. Music can flip the switch from negative to positive, hopefully giving you enough of a jump start to begin to turn things around. Did you know that the music you listen to actually changes the way you perceive the world around you? As simple as it sounds, scientists have found that listening to particularly happy or sad music changes the way we perceive the world. That's right. You're more likely to see even neutral things as positive while you're listening to especially happy music. The beauty of it is that it isn't even one particular type of music that works. All that matters is that you think the music is happy. Many studies have shown the impact music can have on mood. One study had college students listen to music and keep a mood journal. Not only did our sample of students report more positive emotions after listening to music, but their already positive emotions were intensified by listening to music. Music can also help in some very specific areas that make a big difference in mood management. Stress management, for example. Listening to relaxing music can reduce stress, and not just the perception of it. Music actually improves the physiological symptoms of stress. For example, lowering your heart rate and blood pressure. And it doesn't really matter what type. Classical works, but so does any music you personally find relaxing. Heavy metal, though, had the same results as silence, so if you're looking to reduce your stress levels, maybe save the Megadeth for later. Sleep. Improving your sleep can go a long way toward stabilizing your mood, and listening to music can help with that. Relaxing music reduces sympathetic nervous system activity, decreases anxiety, blood pressure, heart and respiratory rate, and may have positive effects on sleep via muscle relaxation and distraction from thoughts. Exercise. You know what else helps with sleep? And, independent of that, also helps you feel better. Exercise. Getting at least 150 minutes of exercise per week, that's 30 minutes 5 days a week, improves sleep quite quickly in a big way. Naturally, here at Underwater Audio, we're big believers in exercise and how music can help with it. Whether music makes it a more pleasant experience, so you're more likely to do it, or pumps you up and wrings more out of your workout, it can give you the boost you need. The winter blues and seasonal affective disorder. Sometimes feeling down can go to the next level, and certain times of the year can make it even worse. And while winter is the most common culprit, it's actually not the only one. Even with full-blown seasonal affective disorder, music makes a demonstrable difference. A study set in a nursing home compared two groups of elderly patients with SAD over the course of an 8-week therapy session. Patients who listened to music as part of their weekly therapy session showed a significant improvement over those who didn't. So take that first step towards feeling better. If you're feeling down, put on some music, come up with a plan, and maybe get outside for a bit.
Just like a distant star, I simply cannot hold.
Sarah Bareilles and Ingrid Michaelson's 2008 Winter Song introduces our pop music news. It's week 397 of BeautifulSongsOfTheWeek.com. Winter Song. More than any other season, winter feels like it is much more easily navigated with the help of a good friend. It's not like summer when the rules of friendship are more relaxed. With cottages, camps, and impulsive road trips, a friend might disappear for a couple of weeks in the summer, and you wouldn't think twice. But solid, sympathetic, mitten-in-mitten friendship is mandatory if you want to make it through the winter. You might need that support through the family stress that is the holiday season. You might need someone to hold you to your New Year's resolutions. You might need someone's reassurance that Valentine's Day isn't such a big deal. A good friend can make up for all those missing hours of daylight. This song is a tribute to winter friendship, written by two friends who were born a day apart in early December as winter began. What makes this song beautiful? Bareilles and Michaelson collaborated remotely, sending files back and forth like digital pen pals. Their voices wander from unison to harmony, sometimes singing together, other times separately. My favorite moment is probably the ascending scales and the backup vocals as we approach the four-minute mark. They give an undeniable feeling of optimism. In the accompanying video, two adorable animated characters, presumably based on Bareilles and Michaelson, go on a winter adventure together. They walk through forests, go tobogganing over scrolling landscapes, and eventually they greet spring together. The Squirrel Nut Zippers, Winter Weather, introduce our local music news. It's a biography written by Stephen Thomas Erlewine, published in AllMusic.com, about the Squirrel Nut Zippers. Squirrel Nut Zippers had the good fortune to make it to the big leagues at the same time that swing revival of the 1990s crested. Although the group's roots stretched far beyond the Rat Pack, they were informed by New Orleans jazz, hot dance music, Harlem jazz, and other jumping music of pre-war America. They nevertheless benefited from the lounge revival, which helped lift their 1996 album, Hot, and its accompanying single, Hell, into the Billboard charts.
So the two of us can get together. There's nothing sweeter, finer. When it's nice and cold, I can hold baby.
Squirrel Nut Zippers kept touring into the early 2000s, after which they went on hiatus. Leader Jimbo Mathis revived the group in 2008 for a live album, but it wasn't until 2018 that the group released a new album, Beast of Burgundy. Jimbo Mathis, vocals, guitar, trombone, and Catherine Whalen, vocals and banjo, formed Squirrel Nut Zippers in 1993 in the Chapel Hill area of North Carolina. Settling in the nearby small town of Eflin, the couple renovated a farmhouse where they pursued various arts and crafts, and eventually the band fell into shape as Mathis and Whalen met local citizens like Don Raleigh, bass, and Ken Mosher, guitar, saxophone, vocals, who shared an interest in hot jazz. Before long, Chris Phillips, drums and percussion, Tom Maxwell, vocals, guitar, baritone, saxophone, clarinet, and Jay Weidenhouse, trumpet, were added to the band, which was now named after an old-fashioned candy bar, Squirrel Nut Zippers. The group soon made its live debut in Chapel Hill. Within a few months, had developed a large fan base throughout the South. So, how did you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, true or false, the Earth is farthest from the sun in this, the wintry month of January. Is that true or B, false? Correct answer is answer B, false. As noted in the article titled 15 Surprising Facts About Winter Weather, published in mentalfloss.com, every January, the start of the winter season in the northern hemisphere, the Earth reaches the point in its orbit that's nearest to the sun. Despite some common misconceptions, the seasonal drop in temperatures has nothing to do with the distance of our planet to the sun. It instead has everything to do with which direction the Earth's axis is tilting, which is why the two hemispheres experience winter at different times of the year. And the answer to our second question, the city with the most snowfall per year, is located in which country? Is that A, USA, which includes Alaska, of course, B, Japan, C, Russia, D, Iceland, or E, Argentina? Hint, this city receives an average of 26 feet of snow per year. Correct answer is answer B, Japan. As noted in that same article, 15 Surprising Facts About Winter Weather, the snowiest city on Earth is in Japan. Aomori City in northern Japan receives more snowfall than any major city on the planet. Each year, citizens are pummeled with 312 inches, or about 26 feet, of snow on average. So let's close out this January program with a remix of Lena Horne's Let It Snow, Just Not Too Much. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. And as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.